Welcome to Healthy Living, Healthy Planet Radio, sponsored by EarthX, the world's largest environmental experience, and also sponsored by Natural Awakenings Magazine. Live your healthiest life on a healthier planet. Now here's your host, Bernice Butler.
Welcome to Healthy Living, Healthy Planet Radio today. We are now at the beginning of our fifth season, and we remain just as excited as ever to help you explore and understand that unbreakable relationship between your health and the health of the planet. Here we look at the hottest topics related to our environment and its sustainability and how they affect your health and wellness. Here, issues like climate change, plastic pollution, extreme weather events, and others will meet up with everyday impacts like allergies and asthma, digestive issues and gut health, cancers, lung, heart issues, and more. So listen today as we interview experts for today's show on our series on extreme weather events. And today we're focusing in on extreme heat and heat waves. Now, extreme weather events, especially those related to heat, are no longer distant concerns that have been just relegated to scientific discussions. They are tangible, they are feelable, and they're affecting our lives in ways that we may not fully understand. So as we embark on this hopefully enlightening conversation, let's first acknowledge that the consequences of extreme heat extend far, far beyond just a sweltering day. The consequences have profound implications for our physical, our mental, and our community-wide well-being. And so today we're going to try to unravel some of these intricacies. Now, I know you might be thinking, so why should I care about extreme heat and heat waves when I'm just trying to get through my day? Well, buckle up, because we're about to explore how these environmental events can have a profound impact on your life, your health, your pocketbook, and the world around you. So while environmental issues can often, as we mentioned, feel distant or unrelated to what we do every day, however, the truth is, whether we realize it or not, or whether we want to accept it or not, the environment is intricately woven into the very fabric of our lives. From the air that we breathe to the water that we drink, each and every aspect of our well-being is indeed connected to the health of the planet. So why focus on extreme heat and heat waves? Well, that's because they're not just about rising temperatures. They're about the undeniable shifts in our climate that demand our attention. These aren't just abstract or faraway issues. They're affecting our communities, our homes, and even our bodies in ways that we probably don't recognize most of the time. So picture this: scorching summer days that seem to linger longer than before, with temperatures soaring to unprecedented heights. And this isn't just about feeling uncomfortable during a heat wave. It's about the very air we breathe holding more moisture, making it harder for our bodies to cool down. It's about the rising number of heat-related illnesses affecting the young and the elderly alike. But that's not all. Extreme heat also contributes to other types of disasters, such as droughts and wildfires. And these events can have a devastating effect on agriculture, on our ecosystems, and the economy. For instance, droughts can reduce crop yields and force livestock farmers to sell animals due to lack of feed and water. And of course, that's going to up our prices way high. Wildfires can destroy homes, they can destroy businesses and natural resources, as well as increase air pollution and health risk. And then urban areas are particularly vulnerable to extreme heat due to the urban heat island effect that we'll talk about a little bit later. And this is when buildings, roads, and infrastructure absorb the heat during the day and they release it slowly at night, thereby keeping cities much hotter than surrounding areas. And this can increase energy demand for cooling, it can worsen our air quality, and of course create health hazards for residents, some of which we are just beginning to discover. So as you can see, extreme heat and heat waves are not just isolated events. They're interconnected with many, many other aspects of our environment, our society, and our day-to-day well-being. And that's why we need to take action now to mitigate these impacts and adapt to these realities. And we can do this by reducing greenhouse gas emissions, by conserving water and energy, and improving urban planning and design, as well as enhancing our emergency preparedness. And by working together, we indeed can make a difference in the face of extreme heat and heat waves. We can protect ourselves and our communities and our planet from the harmful effects. Now, this is a lot, but here to help us explore and unpack some of this are Katarina Giudice and Christina Dahl. Katarina is an emergency physician in Boston, and her efforts have been aimed at raising awareness of climate change as a health emergency. She has developed a climate change elective curriculum for emergency medical residents worldwide, and she has spearheaded multiple publications on managing pathologies affected by climate change. Welcome, Katarina, and did I get all of that right?
Yes, thank you so much for having me on the show.
And thank you so much for making time to join us. And our other guest is Christina Dahl, and we refer to Christina as Christy. And she is a principal climate scientist for the Climate and Energy Program at the Union of Concerned Scientists. Christy provides scientific direction, strategic thinking, and technical and analytical expertise for the climate team, as well as across the Union of Concerned Scientists campaigns and programs. Christy is also responsible for designing, executing, and communicating scientific analysis to make climate change more tangible to the general public and to policymakers. And that is a great big job, Christy. Her research focuses on the impact of climate change, particularly sea level rise and extreme heat, as it relates to people and places. And prior to joining the Union of Concerned Scientists, Christy was the Associate Director of School-Wide Climate Initiatives at Rutgers University, and she also served as a science communicator for Al Gore's Climate Project. Welcome, Christy, and did I get all of that right?
Thanks so much for having me, and yes.
And thank you for making time to join us. And again, I really appreciate you as a fellow climate change communicator. I think that's part of the problem. That's why we started Healthy Living, Healthy Planet Radio, is so people could really understand. And once they understand some of this, then they'll know how it affects them. And they'll know, too, that to care is really not an option at all. So, again, thank you for what you do. So we want to start out, though, with you, Christy. Can you tell us about the scientific definition of a heat wave? And how is that definition maybe changed over time?
Sure. So there's no one way that the term heat wave gets defined. And that's partly due to the fact that what feels like extreme or unusual heat in one region can be very commonplace in another. So I'll talk about a couple of the different ways that heat wave gets defined. So one way is by looking at the temperatures that are at the 99th percentile of all temperatures experienced in a given location. So this might be something like 102 degrees in Portland, Oregon. That might be the hottest sort of temperatures they experience normally. But in Phoenix, Arizona, it might be something more like 115, right? Because Phoenix is a much hotter place to begin with. So one way is to look at the percentiles. Another way is to look at periods of time and when temperatures might be high for extended periods of time. So, for example, the National Weather Service has definitions of heat waves that are something like when the heat index, which is a combination of temperature and humidity, when the heat index is expected to be above 90 degrees for two or more days, and when nighttime temperatures won't dip below 80 degrees Fahrenheit. So usually heat wave has that implication of it's multiple days. Often it incorporates things like hot nights. It can incorporate things like humidity. But when we think about how the general public, how we as people experience heat, it's also important to be layering on some additional risk factors like being elderly, being on certain medications, having underlying conditions, et cetera.
Now we just have like a couple of minutes to go before break. We just lived through the planet's, the world's hottest summer. You know, each of us in our individual localities, I'm sure we heard this is the hottest summer on record, but it ends up being the hottest summer on the planet. So what made this happen and what made it unusual?
It's a great question, and it's one that scientists haven't fully answered yet. So you're right. This summer was shockingly hot. After record-breaking June, we had a record-breaking July and record-breaking August, and then a September that was so off the charts for global temperatures that climate scientists have really been scratching their heads and trying to figure out exactly how we jumped up so much in temperature for September. So there are a few things going on this summer that we do know, though. One is that we're at the start of an El Nino event. And typically, the El Nino phase of our Pacific climate pattern tends to make the globe hotter on average. So we do see higher temperatures on average during El Nino years. So that might be part of what's happening.
How long is an El Nino period? Or this is El Nino year. Will there be another one next year or what?
Yeah, typically El Nino events last a couple of years. It's an oscillation, goes back and forth between the warm phase, which is El Nino, and the cool phase, which is La Nina. And there's no real set amount of time for those events. But on top of the El Nino, we know that we have long-term global warming because of the greenhouse gases like carbon dioxide that people are adding to the atmosphere. And scientists have gone back and looked at these summer temperature records that we experienced this year and found that they really would not have been possible without the effect of human-caused climate change.
I'm going to have to stop you to go to break, and that's a perfect place to stop. And we want to take up when we come back that what you said is that scientists have discovered that this record-breaking heat would not have been possible without climate change. So we'll be right back on the other side with Christy Dahl with the Union of Concerned Scientists and Katarina Giudice, who is an emergency physician in Boston. We'll be right back. Thank you all. We want to give a shout out now to our sponsors. That is Natural Awakenings, Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex Magazine, the Green, Healthy, and Sustainable Living Authority for the DFW Metroplex and North Texas communities. Print issues of Natural Awakenings can be found in all HEB stores, Natural Grocers, All Central Markets, Sunflower Shops, and many, many other locations, as well as available free for download online at nadallas.com. Check them out. Our other sponsor is North Haven Gardens, serving the Metroplex since 1951, the most respected horticultural establishment in North Texas, offering gardening and plant education, concierge services, DIY classes, gifts, and more. And our other sponsor is Lynn Dental Care, practicing dentistry for over 38 years with a holistic approach, non-mercury, looking at the whole body. Specializing in periodontics, Dr. Lynn is board certified by the International Academy of Oral Medicine and Toxicology. Check them out at LynnDentalCare.com. Thank you, sponsors. Welcome back to Healthy Living, Healthy Planet Radio today. To today's show, as we start our series on extreme weather events, and today we're focusing in on extreme heat and heat waves, and we have back with us Christy Dahl with the Union of Concerned Scientists and Katarina Giudice, who is an emergency physician in Boston. And again, thank you all so much for joining us. And before we went to the break, Christy was telling us that we could not have enjoyed, that is certainly a facetious term, we could not have endured what has just been the hottest summer on the planet had it not been for climate change. And I want to dig a little bit more into that. How were they able to tell that this was due to climate change and not just normal way things go with the climate?
So scientists have pioneered a new branch of science over the last decade or so that we call attribution science. And what this field of research aims to do is to figure out just how much of an influence human-caused climate change is having on the weather that we're having. And so what scientists do is look at a bunch of different climate models. So these are computer-based models that incorporate everything we know about our planet and how it works. They have oceans and atmospheres and land surfaces. They have ocean circulation. They have El Nino events. And they are able to run those models with different amounts of greenhouse gases, like carbon dioxide. And so they can tell, based on how much carbon dioxide humans have put into the atmosphere already versus what the world would have been like without our influence, how much more likely or how much more severe events like heat waves are becoming. And so it's really by comparing what we know to be natural in the Earth system to what we know we have done to our atmosphere that we're able to make these attributions of the things that we're experiencing today to human-caused climate change.
Attribution science. I like that. Does it enjoy, I suppose, the status that it should in terms of what the immense things that it can do to help us understand what's going on with us?
I think so. It's been a very rapidly evolving field, and I think it really developed in part in response to the fact that there was so little public awareness and awareness among our policymakers of just how profoundly climate change was altering our daily experiences. And so, you know, this whole field was developed to illustrate, look, this is how much we have altered our climate. This is what we're experiencing. And right now, when that science is, it's very well accepted, there are hundreds of, you know, scientific publications and peer-reviewed journals, the attribution science community is kind of asking itself, well, what comes next for attribution science? Now that we've demonstrated this, what other uses does this have? And how could it potentially help to inform conversations about compensation of communities, particularly in the global south, for extreme weather that they're experiencing that's due to climate change?
You know what I wish, I dream about, is that when we are in the throes of these extreme heat events and heat waves in the summer, that they would always verbally attribute it to climate change. If that could happen, I think that would make just, it would really put us ahead by leaps and bounds, not only on the extreme weather events, but many other of the other environmental issues and their impact. If they say, you know, this is the hottest weather we've had in the world, or in North Texas, or in San Francisco, or Boston, wherever you are, and it's due to climate change. And if they say that at every turn, then people will, it'll get down to the consciousness of people. That's my dream. But anyway,
yeah, I think that's right. And, you know, that's a lot of what I do as a scientist, is really trying to get reporters to connect those dots for people. This is what you're experiencing: a month of temperatures above 110 in Phoenix. This is related to climate change. And studies show that when people experience extreme heat, they are more receptive to the idea that climate change is going to be a very heavy presence in our lives. And so that makes them more likely to be supportive of policymaker actions to address it.
Katarina, though, I want to talk with you about health-related issues. Many of us do experience, you know, hot weather, obviously, in our daily lives, but again, we don't fully understand the implications of extreme heat. Can you explain how extreme heat affects both our health, both indirectly and directly?
Sure. That's a great question. Mm-hmm. And Bernice, it's honestly pretty simple. We as humans have evolved to maintain our temperature at a very narrow window. And it's a window where our cells can operate and our body can function in a healthy way. And we've evolved all of these different physiologic changes to be able to maintain that narrow temperature. When it's hot but not too hot outside, one of the things our bodies can do is to basically increase blood circulation to our extremities, to our skin, so that heat can then dissipate into the environment. The other fantastic evolutionary feat that we've achieved is the ability to sweat. So when the temperatures are even higher outside, what we can do is start sweating. And then when it's dry and hot outside, that sweat can evaporate and also dissipate some of the heat. The problem is that is only so effective. And at certain temperatures, those mechanisms that have evolved are just not enough. And when it's not enough, we get to dangerous body temperatures where our cells can't function right anymore. The other problem that we see in some areas is that in order for that sweating mechanism to work, we also need for the humidity to be low because we need that differential of humidity outside and our humidity, which is our sweating ability. And when it's really humid outside, we don't have that differential and we can't sweat and dissipate the heat as effectively. So what that means is that in some places where it's a little bit more humid, even temperatures that are not as high can cause serious health effects.
I wanted to, something you said I wanted to dig into just a minute or have you repeat or connect the dots. And that is the moisture differential that you talked about. I want to go back over that so that I make sure that we understand it. It's a simple thing, but I can tell it's very powerful in terms of heat and heat's effect on our health. So would you explain that again? Because I think you're saying that there needs to be a big difference between moisture in our bodies and moisture outside, or you tell me again, but if you go back over that and just connect the dots for us.
Absolutely. Let me try explaining it a little bit better. Like you mentioned, we need a drier air outside makes it so that our ability to evaporate the heat from our body is better.
So you're saying when it's drier air makes us sweat more or sweat better?
It makes that mechanism more effective. Okay. Yes. When it's very humid outside, it makes that mechanism less effective. So there's something that's called heat index, which kind of puts the two things together. It puts the temperature outside together and the humidity. And what we tend to see is that when the heat index, so when the temperature is high and the humidity is high, the risk for having harmful effects to heat is higher.
That's interesting. On one level, it's counterintuitive. You'd think if it's more humid, I would think that I'd sweat more. But you're saying when it's more humid, our body's ability to sweat has been impaired.
That's correct.
Yeah, interesting. Christy, you want to weigh in on that?
Yeah, it's a really interesting point and totally agree with what Katarina's saying here. It's, in my understanding, part of what allows our bodies to cool ourselves by sweating is that sweat is evaporating off of our skin. So it's not so much the liquid on our skin that's cooling us, it's that effect of cooling that happens when it evaporates. And so when it's really humid, that evaporation can't happen as easily, as opposed to when it's really dry. You can imagine like a towel drying off really quickly at the beach after you swim.
I gotcha.
And so that's part of what's going on with the high humidity.
It's a sweat drying up or evaporating, as you scientists say, that allows us to cool. And when it's humid, our sweat's not going to dry or evaporate. And so that's what's causing the problem. I got it. Interesting, because it is kind of counterintuitive, but thank you all for taking time to explain that. And we've just got 1 minute to go before we need to go to break. So I want to start this conversation with you, Katarina. And that is, what factors make someone more likely to be affected by extreme heat as opposed to others, perhaps?
Yeah. And I'm going to start off by saying that we're all at risk for having detrimental health effects of heat. This is a big conversation, and I think we're going to address it a little bit more after the break. But like Christy insinuated, there are certain factors that can make some people more at risk. So if you're very young, if you're very old, if you have health problems like heart problems, kidney problems, if you take certain medications, all of those things can make your risk to have certain health effects from the heat a little bit higher.
Indeed. And I do want to, we're going to go to break here now, but I want to dig into that and again, help to connect some of those dots in maybe a broader base, because it seems like to me that people are at risk too when they don't know they have some health issues and the heat can exacerbate them and really bring a lot of havoc with that. We're going to go to break now. We will be right back on the other side with Katarina Giudice and with Christy Dahl, and they are making us smarter. Thank you, ladies. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Healthy Living, Healthy Planet Radio today. To our show on extreme weather events, as we focus in on extreme heat and heat waves today, and here with us today, making us much smarter, are Christy Dahl with the Union of Concerned Scientists and Katarina Giudice who is an emergency physician in Boston. And again, thank you all for joining us today. Now, before the break, Katarina, you were talking to us a little bit about some of the factors that make some more likely to be affected by extreme heat. And of course, what we usually hear about are young people and elderly, but I think there's a lot of in between. So if you can talk to us more about that, and I don't know if you have any statistics, or maybe even tell us about, I guess, maybe generalized or general conditions, if you can. I know here in North Texas, we had a big issue, which is still ongoing in litigation, that just happened this past summer where a postman died in the heat. And I think they found later that there was a condition that he didn't know about or something like that. And that's what's kind of concerning to me about extreme heat. So if you talk to us a little bit about these things that make us more susceptible.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think just very quickly, I think it's important to remember how our body adapts. So I'm just going to very quickly summarize it one more time. Mm-hmm. So for us to be able to withstand heat, we need to have an intact ability to increase our blood flow. So our hearts have to be working appropriately. We have to have the ability to preserve water. So our kidneys have to be working appropriately. We have to have the ability to say, oh, wow, it's really hot where I am. I'm going to seek shade. I'm going to go somewhere else. So we have to, one, have the intact ability to perceive the temperature and to remove ourselves from dangerous environments.
And what about water and all of that? To drink water when we need it or be able to tell when we need it?
Absolutely. Have an intact sensation of thirst is also really important. And we have to have also an impaired ability to sweat. So any condition that's going to change our ability to do those very important functions are going to put us at higher risk. So, for example, if you have a heart condition and your heart can't increase your blood flow because it doesn't beat as strong as a healthy heart, something that's called heart failure, for example, that puts you at higher risk because you can't increase your blood flow and your body has a decreased ability to adapt to the heat.
Remind us again what increased blood flow has to do with this process.
Yeah, so we talked about how one of the mechanisms that our body adjusts to the heat is by increasing the blood flow to our extremities and to our skins so that that heat can then dissipate. From our body to the environment.
Okay. So increased blood flow helps us to sweat? Is that the bottom line?
It helps get the blood to the extremities so that then it can transfer that heat that's in our core to the environment.
Okay.
So continuing down the list, if your kidneys are not working appropriately and you can't reabsorb water and prevent that water from you getting out of your body, that's going to dehydrate you faster and put you at higher risk. Like I mentioned, it's one of the reasons why we care so much about the risk of young children. One is that they have a higher surface area to body mass. And the other one is that they don't have all of the mechanisms that adults have to deal with the heat. So they can't, babies can't get themselves out of hot environments. They can't verbalize their needs. They don't have the same level of sweating as a normal adult. And some of the same things apply to older folks. We mentioned that there are also medications that can impact our ability to adapt to the heat. And they work in very similar mechanisms. So there's medications that prevent your heart from pumping very strong. So some blood pressure medications, for example, kind of block your ability of the heart to pump, which is incredibly important if you're managing blood pressure, but that can put you at higher risk for heat-related illnesses.
Do doctors habitually, or are they required to advise or warn their patients who are on blood pressure medication that they need to be aware of extreme heat?
I think it's a conversation we could do better on. I think it's something that's become, doctors are becoming more aware of the health effects of climate change and of extreme heat. I think we can always do better. Everybody should educate themselves a little bit better of what puts them at higher risk for having heat-related illnesses.
Yeah, that seems to be something that really needs to get publicized much more, because I know a number of people who are on blood pressure medications or who may have high blood pressure, medication or not. And I'll bet you 90% of them have no idea that they are at increased risk with extreme heat.
And it's not just blood pressure medications. Mm-hmm. It's medications that make you pee more. So a class of medications that we call diuretics.
Right.
Also dehydrate you faster. A lot of people are on diuretics.
Right.
That are used for mental health. So a lot of antidepressants also change your ability to adapt to heat. And so many people are on these medications. And we don't recognize that puts us at higher risk.
Thank you for that. Are there any other generalized, because those are just really important. And I'm sure that our postman here in North Texas was probably not the only person who had to be in that heat who had some mortal consequences. So what might be some of the other issues or conditions or medications that we want to watch out for?
There's so many different things that we could talk about, right, Bernice? Mm-hmm. Another medication that can put people at higher risk are medications that we call anticholinergic because they decrease our ability to sweat. And that's a very common substance that's in medicines that are that we take for allergies, also a substance that's in a lot of medications that we take for mental health reasons. Pregnancy also has a lot of physiologic changes, so pregnant women are more vulnerable to hot weather and for heat-related illnesses for a variety of reasons. Those are a few other important ones that I wanted to mention.
Okay, and just a couple more things on this, and then I want to go back to Christy. You mentioned allergy medications. Is that common allergy medications, or is there just a class in specific that's going to hinder our ability to sweat and thus give us some perhaps negative reactions with extreme heat?
That's a great question. And the pharmaceutical side of things is a little bit complicated.
Right.
But a lot of the allergy medicines that we take also have what I was mentioning earlier, this anticholinergic ability. So and they have it to different degrees. So some of them are a little bit more than others. But it gets a little bit complicated.
Right. But it does sound like something that those of us, which is about probably 80% of the people in North Texas, I think, who take allergy medication should probably talk to our physicians about that. Last thing, and then I do want to move from this, and that is dehydration. That is something I hear daily, weekly in the heat, that people had a heat stroke, or they thought they did, or they had to go to the ER because they were dehydrated, yet they were drinking all the water. What can people best do or know when dehydration is coming up on them in these heat waves?
Yeah, another great question. Dehydration is, obviously, we need to be well hydrated to be able to sweat and dissipate our heat. When we become dehydrated, when we're sweating, we become more dehydrated. When it's hot outside, we become more dehydrated. So yes, Bernice, it's so important to make sure that we're drinking water. The one thing to acknowledge is that water by itself doesn't have electrolytes. So we're also losing sodium and other important electrolytes as our kidneys are working hard to maintain our body in that Goldilocks state. So it's also important to be repleting those electrolytes. So eating meals along the way that have some salt, drinking Gatorade, although the sugar in the Gatorade can be dangerous for some people that have diabetes and other health issues, Pedialyte and other over-the-counter drinks that you can buy that have that electrolyte repletion. It's always important to remember that it's not just the water that's important, but yes, drinking water is incredibly important. When you become dehydrated, you're at higher risk for having muscle cramps, kidney injuries. You can pass out because you can't maintain your blood pressure at a level that can maintain your the perfusion, so the blood flow going up to your brain. So dehydration can be very dangerous.
Indeed, because I think that's a very important point that many of us have learned, but probably more of us have not, that it's not just water. when we're in these extreme heat events. You need to keep a bottle of Gatorade in your car or in your purse. We're going to go ahead and go to break now. We'll be right back with these two ladies who really are indeed making us smarter. We have been with Christy Dahl with the Union of Concerned Scientists and Katarina Giudice, who is an emergency physician in Boston. Thank you all. We'll be right back on the other side. We want to give a shout out now to our sponsors. That is Natural Awakenings, Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex Magazine, the Green, Healthy, and Sustainable Living Authority for the DFW Metroplex and North Texas communities. Print issues of Natural Awakenings can be found in all HEB stores, natural grocers, all central markets, sunflower shops, and many, many other locations, as well as available free for download online at nadallas.com. Check them out. Our other sponsor is North Haven Gardens, serving the Metroplex since 1951, the most respected horticultural establishment in North Texas, offering gardening and plant education, concierge services, DIY classes, gifts, and more. Check them out at nhg.com. And our other sponsor is Lynn Dental Care, practicing dentistry for over 38 years with a holistic approach looking at the whole body. Specializing in periodontics, Dr. Lynn is board certified by the International Academy of Oral Medicine and Toxicology. Check them out at LynnDentalCare.com. Thank you, sponsors. Welcome back to Healthy Living, Healthy Planet Radio today. To today's show on extreme weather events, where we're focusing in on extreme heat and heat waves. And we are back with Katarina Giudice, who is an emergency physician in Boston, and Christy Dahl with the Union of Concerned Scientists. And they really are making us smarter. I want to go back to you, Christy, to talk about perhaps some of the lesser known social and economic impacts of extreme heat. But before we talk about lesser known, what would you say, though, is the are there statistics about the economic impacts of extreme heat? And then I want to talk about some of the lesser known things that are going on or happening that people just probably don't know about or notice.
Sure. So getting at kind of the economic impacts of extreme heat is really challenging because, you know, you might have a heat wave, let's say, in California in 1 week and in New York the next week and in Paris the next week. And so every location is going to have its own means of collecting the data. Every location is going to be affected differently. And so it's hard to get a really clear picture in terms of numbers overall. But we do know that when heat waves happen, it decreases labor productivity. It can often decrease tourism, if that's an important source of revenue for a location. And it can cause damage to things like crops. So there are these both in-the-moment effects, like things like reduced tourism, but also these longer-term, more seasonal or even annual changes like damage to crops that can cause economic ripples throughout different markets. So countries like the United States and most of the countries in Europe that have a relatively temperate climate, it's not too extreme, tend not to be as affected economically by heat waves as more tropical countries are. Definitely, we see hotter countries tend to suffer more during extreme heat events. And some of that has to do with things like global economics. Like a lot of countries that are in more tropical locations are countries that don't have as much wealth. And so an event like a big heat wave, or you could think of, you know, the economic effects of a hurricane in a tropical country, tend to have a more devastating effect.
Are there any, perhaps, foods, produce, or goods that we can no longer get because of extreme heat or heat waves, or that we're on the verge of being without or eliminated due to heat or heat waves that you might know of or that you've heard discussed?
Yeah, that's a great question. I tend to think about foods as on a more annual basis because they can be affected. Let's say a food is planted in the spring and harvested in the fall. It might be affected by cold and heat depending on, you know, what's happening with the weather at any given time of year. So we do know that this, over the past couple of years, Florida oranges have suffered quite a bit, as well as Georgia peaches. So this year, Georgia had, it's known for its peach crop. And this year I heard stories of pie makers having to bring in peaches from other states, and then the ripple effects of tourists in the state thinking, you know, I came here for the Georgia peaches, but, you know, I'm eating peaches from New Jersey or wherever it was. And in the case of Georgia, that was related to there being a kind of abnormal spring warmth for the peach crop. And then there was a hard freeze and it just destroyed a lot of the crop. So definitely seeing a lot of weather-related effects on our crops.
Indeed. I think most of us have at least heard about, like, what the freezes can do to crops. But that's why I ask. I'm sure that the heat is doing something to them as well, because just like our bodies, that produce is not accustomed to this heat either. So it makes a difference. Christy, though, are we able to tell anything or any trends or make any forecast about future seasons as a result of this past hottest summer on the planet?
Yeah, so we know that there's variability from year to year in terms of how hot it is and how much extreme heat we'll see. I think one of the things that was really shocking about this past summer was just that it was so much hotter than was anticipated. And that goes for both the temperatures we experienced on land as well as for ocean temperatures, which were really pretty crazy hot all summer long. So when something unusual like that happens within the climate community, we have to ask ourselves, all right, how are our models doing at predicting future climate change if we weren't anticipating this much heat by this year? But it is important to keep in mind that even with climate change, we will have warmer and cooler years. But on average, we will see more frequent and more intense extreme heat. Some modeling work that my colleagues at the Union of Concerned Scientists and I have done suggests that we could see something like a doubling in the number of days with a heat index above 90 degrees by the mid-century period for the United States, and increases in the number of even hotter days, say a heat index of 100 or 105, we'd see even bigger increases in those. So we know that as long as we continue to emit heat-trapping gases by burning fossil fuels, we will see the frequency and intensity of extreme heat continue to increase.
So as we burn all of these fireplaces and all of this wood and all this combustion over this very, very cold winter, we're just adding up for ourselves the intensity of the heat next summer. That I know that's a very simplistic way to put it, but that is a description of it. It's just oversimplified. Thank you for that. Katarina, I want to go back to you and talk a little bit about, are there any particular illnesses that we or that you or that researchers are seeing in other parts of the world that may tell us or that are trying to tell us something about what's in store for us here in the U.S. due to extreme heat?
Bernice, I don't think that we need to look very far. I don't think that we need to look at other parts of the world to really see what's in store for us. I think that we're seeing a lot of the effects of climate change within the boundaries of, you know, of the U.S. We're seeing heat waves. We're seeing droughts. We're seeing worsening tropical storms, hurricanes at higher latitudes that intensify really quickly. We're seeing all of that in our own country. We don't have to look very far. I think that we have the fortune of being in a country that is much more adapted and has a lot more resources to adapt than a lot of the countries like Chrissy was saying in the global south. But I think that we're seeing, I just really want to emphasize that we're already seeing the effects in our own communities.
But looking at like the coronavirus, it was called a novel virus, meaning it was new or different or whatever. And I'm just wondering if there's anything emerging out there or emerging conversations about something new like that or virus or disease that could be caused by extreme heat. because it's not killing off something or it's allowing something else to grow or something of that nature. I don't know if there's any emerging research or trends or discussions about something like that.
That's a great question. To my knowledge, I don't think that there's anything particularly novel per se. Mm-hmm. I think the way that I like to think about climate change and extreme heat is that it's a risk exacerbator. Yes. So have we seen heat strokes and heat illnesses in the past? Yes. But because we're seeing hotter days that are happening more frequently and lasting longer in communities that typically don't deal with heat, then we're seeing more of it. We're seeing more of things that we have seen historically, but now it's just becoming more severe and more intense. And I think that applies to a lot of the other effects of climate change as well.
And I want to go to Christy really quick for her last word, then I want to come back to you in terms of what we can do. Christy, are you guys, in terms of research or anything, seeing anything novel, new, expected out there on that front?
Yeah, there's a lot of science that looks, this isn't so much at human health, but as our winters warm in particular, we see things like pests for crops not getting killed off by cold temperatures, things like bark beetles, which have decimated western forests over the past decade or so, normally would have been killed off by colder winters. So there are definitely some kind of game changers in terms of ecosystems. But I think, you know, as Katarina was saying, a lot of what we are seeing is just more of what we risks we've faced in the past. And in some ways, that's really encouraging to me because it means that we're not dealing with something completely new and unknown. We just need to ramp up our systems and our resources and our funding for the things we already know we how to deal with, but we need to deal with at a higher level and a bigger scale.
Thank you for that encouragement. I appreciate that. Last word, and we just have a minute to go, Katarina. And that is, are there specific behaviors or precautions that we should adopt on that? I think we've already talked about which behaviors we should not do in order to protect ourselves for the extreme heat and heat waves. So what behaviors or precautions we should adopt?
Absolutely. I think number one, like we talked about, Bernice, is knowing your own risks, knowing things about yourself that might put you at higher risk, being aware of your environment outside. So being aware of when a heat wave is going to come and having a plan for yourself when that's going to happen. Things like avoiding peak temperature times. If you like to exercise, don't go around noon. Go in the very early morning or the very late evening. If you work outside, making sure that you have a hydration plan, that you're avoiding those peak temperature times, protecting yourself with the right clothing, things that are light color, that are reflective, are really important. Like we talked about, staying well hydrated, but also remembering to take some electrolytes and avoiding things that are heavily caffeinated or have too much sugar in it, because research has shown that that can actually impact your kidney's ability to maintain us hydrated. And the one thing that's so important, Bernice, that I really want to emphasize is checking in on your community. It's not just about ourselves. It's about our neighbors, our family, our loved ones. So checking in on people that you think are at higher risk is also
indeed. And thank you. And one of the things that I learned today, too, is if you're on prescription medication, ask your doctor, talk to your doctor about the consequences or anything you need to do with that medication due to the heat. Thank you, ladies. You have really, really made us smarter. And thank you, listeners, for listening in today to Healthy Living, Healthy Planet Radio. The conversation starts here, but our goal is for it to continue in your home, in your social circles, your workplaces, at the water cooler, and in the grocery checkout line, so that we can all work together to realize that healthy living is simply not possible without a healthy planet. Our culture is a result of a trillion tiny acts taken by billions of people every day like yourselves. And each of those tiny acts can seem insignificant, but they all add up, one way or the other, to the change that we each live through. This is your host, Bernice Butler. Thank you for joining us today, and join us again next week for more on extreme weather events, and listen to any of our past shows on podcasts wherever you get yours. Thank you.